Welcome to the debate on Press TV. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Jamal Khashoggi was the victim of a brutal and premeditated murder planned and perpetrated by Saudi officials. That's what exactly the UN Special Rapporteur on extrajudicial executions concluded in her report. Agnes Callamard cited, quote, credible and sufficient evidence that ranking Saudi officials were implicated in the premeditated murder. She's called for targeted sanctions against Saudi officials, including Crown Prince bin Salman. In January, Saudi authorities tried 11 suspects, and the state prosecution said it would seek death sentences for five of them. Is justice served that way? Who's responsible for the gruesome murder of the journalists? We'll watch a report, and then we'll proceed with our discussion.
Deliberate, premeditated, and extrajudicial. This is how the first independent investigation into the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi described his death. In a much-anticipated report assembled by UN Special Rapporteur, Saudi Arabia was held responsible for the murder of the 58-year-old journalist.
The first important message I think my report highlights is the fact that the execution of Mr. Khashoggi was the responsibility of the state of Saudi Arabia.
The UN investigator said there is credible evidence linking Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to the killing of the Washington Post columnist, demanding that the White House ally be investigated over the murder.
What needs to be investigated is the extent to which the Crown Prince knew or should have known of what would have happened to Mr. Khashoggi, whether he directly or indirectly incited the killing.
The report urged sanctions against the kingdom's de facto ruler until he comes clean about his role in the killing. The report also said the current international sanctions against some senior Saudi officials over the case have failed to correspond to what it called the gravity of the crime. Saudi Arabia has rejected the report, saying it contains clear contradictions and baseless allegations which challenge its credibility. A team of Saudi operatives killed Khashoggi in the kingdom's consulate in the Turkish city of Istanbul in October last year and reportedly dismembered him. The murder provoked widespread revulsion, leading many Saudi allies to distance themselves from the Crown Prince. However, US President Donald Trump reiterated his support for bin Salman, despite coming under fierce criticism from Republican congressmen over the murder case, particularly after the CIA assessed in November last year that MBS ordered Khashoggi's killing. Ironically, the U.S. siding with the perpetrator is not the first of its kind. Washington has also turned a blind eye to Saudi rights violations, including its deadly war on Yemen in favor of lucrative business and arms deals. Nonetheless, it remains to be seen whether the scathing UN report could pave the way for holding Riyadh accountable for its human rights abuses, executions without fair trials, and a crackdown on its Shia minority as well as political dissidents.
Okay, now let's get going. Joining me in this debate will be Michael Lane, founder of American Institute for Foreign Policy, joining us out of Washington, D.C., and Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, who's joining us from London. Good to see you both, gentlemen. Michael, the UN official is speaking of, quote, sufficient credible evidence that the MBS is responsible for the murder. Agnes Callamard urged the international community to impose targeted sanctions on Saudi officials, particularly MBS. Will she get what she's asked for?
I don't believe she will, no. And I'll tell you why. If you read the report, what she says is that there's credible evidence that warrants further investigation, and that while this investigation is going on, if the Saudis are not cooperative with it, that sanctions ought to be imposed, including sanctions on MBS until such cooperation is received. Well, first of all, cooperation is not going to be received, and second of all, the report concludes that the sanctions should be in effect until such time as the kingdom is able to present evidence showing definitively that the Crown Prince was not involved. That's contrary to United States law. We believe in innocence until proven guilty, and would be very unlikely in a criminal investigation of this sort to go along with a recommendation such as we're discussing here.
Okay. Saad Mohsen Abbas, will the world body be able to bring the real perpetrators to justice?
I don't think so. I mean, ultimately, what's happening in Saudi Arabia is that there's a kind of secrecy and a cover-up and a violation of due process, which is pretty obvious, and this UN report confirms that. But it's hardly a surprise. We know that the Saudi system of law is flawed from top to bottom, and it's kangaroo courts, counter-terrorism, criminal justice courts, which are all in-house. Rules and regulations which are basically used and bent to favor oppression of normal civil rights activists, people who are pushing, obviously, truth narratives in the media. This is normal. I mean, not only that, you know, migrant workers and their oppression within that country is shocking. Over 10,000 people are wallowing in prisons, political prisoners of conscience. The most prominent of who today is, I think, Salman, a cleric called Salman bin Oda, who's a Saudi cleric who happens to be more linked to the Muslim Brotherhood, and who's done nothing but sort of push forward peaceful, if you like, criticism or narratives that talk about a kind of loosening up of the religious, if you like, hard line that the Saudis traditionally have. But he's now on death row, effectively. And they've only just last month executed 37, or in April, executed 37 individuals. June 2016, they executed 47 people all in one day. These executions have accelerated under bin Salman's rule, the very person who's being alleged to have caused this murder, actually been hands-on involved in instigating the murder of Khashoggi.
Right. Michael, the independent reports will be presented to the UN Human Rights Council on the 26th of June, and the body has 47 members, including Saudi Arabia. What's expected to come out of that meeting?
Oh, the Human Rights Commission may indeed take some activity or a vote or something to proceed, but I don't believe ultimately they're going to get anywhere with it. You know, with Saudi Arabia on the commission, it makes it a little bit more problematic that they will, but I expect that that probably they will take some sort of vote to move forward on it, but when it gets to the United Nations General Assembly, it will likely stall at that level. You know, we've had in the past these recommendations of these independent investigators from the UN that make recommendations such as these, and the track record on them moving forward with any specific resolution is not a high percentage.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mohsen Kalamart says that MBS's personal assets abroad should be hit by, quote, targeted sanctions until and unless evidence is provided and corroborated that he carries no responsibility for the execution. Would this ever happen?
No, I don't think any of this is implementable. It's just really about the UN, I think, ticking boxes, and that's what the United Nations has been reduced to. To justify their own existence, I guess they've got to go through these motions, but they mean very little other than the media can pick up on them and create a little bit of pressure. They provide that kind of opportunity, but in terms of actually implementing anything, the United Nations has been a dead duck for a very long time. So these kind of suggestions, really, other than being figments of the imagination of the UN and gathering dust on some filing cabinet, I don't think they're going to go anywhere. The fact of the matter remains that Saudi Arabia is following, I think, the actions of a lot of the American precedents which are being set. I mean, they used to do it before as well, but human rights no longer on an international level is a guaranteed commitment from even Western democracies, if you like. They really are not that bothered about human rights. It's only where it suits their interests. And Saudi Arabia is the classic example. I mean, we can talk about Khashoggi case, and it's a stark example of, if you like, how Americans are not really bothered about human rights in a real way, even with someone who actually seemed to be leaning towards Western secular democratic, if you like, ideals. So the truth is, I think the whole notion of human rights might as well be put into the dustbin as far as these world powers go. They're not interested. There is no morality. It's economic interests that come first. And the Americans will not do anything to bend the Saudis because their vested interests at the moment lie in supporting Saudi Arabia in every way, whether it's the war in Syria, the war in Yemen, whether it's the war against Islamic Republic of Iran. The US needs Saudi Arabia and in a way is utilizing it as a proxy force in the region. So the odd journalist who gets butchered or his bones get sawed up by bin Salman is small feed for them, not interested.
Mm-hmm. Now, Michael, the UN official says that the Saudi judicial proceedings in this case do not meet international standards, so they must cooperate with the UN to conduct further investigation. But Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Jubeir has dismissed the findings of this UN report, calling them a repeat of questionable claims that have already been made. Now, Jubeir insists that his country will never allow the case to be taken away from the Saudi justice system. Is the Saudi judiciary qualified to look into the case?
Well, let's go back to the beginning. And in the beginning, we had a dispute between Turkey and Saudi Arabia as to who was going to have jurisdiction over it. Saudi Arabia had possession of the people in question, so that's 90% of the law right there. So they started conducting their judicial proceedings despite demands for extradition. They started a domestic inquiry and a domestic judicial proceeding. I don't see any circumstances under which the kingdom will give up their jurisdiction over this particular case. The UN certainly could go ahead and vote to move forward on it, which I've already expressed my doubt that they will. So you would have, at best, competing inquiries into the matter, not really Saudi Arabia giving up jurisdiction and transferring it to the UN. In the end of the day, I have to agree with my colleague who opined that this is a UN which, in this particular matter at least, is relatively impotent and unlikely to be able to make any progress or hold anyone accountable or even discover any new information as a result of an inquiry. If Saudi Arabia was unlikely or unwilling to give the information necessary for Turkey to conclude that the Crown Prince was involved in it, I certainly don't think they're going to give it to the United Nations.
So
if it exists at all.
Okay, let me put the same question to Mohsen Abbas. Mohsen, is the Saudi judicial system really qualified and competent to look into this case?
No, they're not. The Saudi judicial system is based on a very kind of, if you like, extreme version, a very violent version of what they call Sharia. Not only that, it's totally rigged in favor of the royal family. They bend it according to their own will. It has no real credibility. They're effectively kangaroo courts, in-house operatives for the Saudi kingdom's leaders. You can see what that is all about in terms of their justice when they actually incarcerated their own family members in a 7-star hotel right at the beginning of bin Salman's rule, where he stamped his authority on his own Saudi cousins. So actually, even the princes themselves, who are multi-billionaires, have no recourse to, if you like, real justice when it comes down to actually having to listen to the totalitarian, despotic leadership of King Salman and his designated heir, bin Salman. So it's really pointless talking about the court infrastructures, which are corrupt and actually controlled from top to bottom by the center.
Now, Michael, after a visit to Turkey in February, Agnes Callamard said that Turkish investigators were hampered in their investigation of the murder. Who could have impeded that process?
Well, clearly there was only two parties involved. There was the kingdom and there was Turkey. And if Turkey was conducting an investigation and they complained that they were not getting transparent or sufficient information from the kingdom, then that was the way their complaint went. That goes back to my last answer, which was that it's unlikely if the kingdom was going to reveal how their inquiry went or all the details of their inquiry, if they were unwilling to reveal it to Turkey, which is where the alleged crime took place, then there is absolutely no reason to believe that that information, if it exists, will be handed over to the United Nations. Saudi Arabia has possession of all the pieces of the puzzle, all the information. One of the complaints in the investigation that the independent investigator said was that the investigation or the trial does not reach in accord with international standards. I know that in the United States, of course, our standards are that we have open trials for the public to understand what's going on. In this particular case, it was a closed trial, so we really don't have the information that we would like on which to make any decision.
Now, Zayed Mohsen Abbas, Riyadh has faced a diplomatic crisis since the murder. Bin Salman's, for instance, summit called Davos in the Desert proved to be a failure. You know, so many high-profile guests just pulled out of it. And then investment in the Arab country has also been impacted by this Khashoggi case, despite the MBS's desperation, you know, to win foreign support for his so-called Vision 2030 plan. So in what other ways has Saudi Arabia been impacted by this?
Well, I think that they've publicly, on the international stage, been totally, become bereft of any credibility. Nobody really takes the Saudis seriously in terms of their human rights. Nobody takes what they say in on a regional level seriously. They're pretty much out on their own, but they're throwing money, and they're trying to exert influence in nations where they had thrown money in the past to try and drag them along with the policies that they want to implement. These policies in the region are failing left, right, and center. But the latest, of course, of which is that they're trying to push for this notion that the Islamic Republic of Iran is responsible for the tankers explosions. I mean, this is all part of Saudi Arabia's very negative role in creating, if you like, death, destruction, conflict within the Middle East. It's not something new. They've been doing it for decades. And what's also negative for them is that as they become more and more, if you like, openly immoral about their foreign policies in a public way, like in Yemen, etc., and in Syria, as they were caught out, what you're finding is that they're having to lean more and more openly to Israel. So the one nation in the entire Middle East which is comprehensively disliked by the Arab nations or the Muslim nations at that region due to what they're doing to the Palestinians, they are becoming more or less collaborative partners very openly. It's being openly now talked about that Saudi Arabia is, along with UAE and some of the other Gulf nations, more allied to Israel than they are to the resistance axis, which wants all foreign influence in the region to be cut out. So actually the Saudis are making themselves more and more, if you like, isolated within the Muslim world, more and more of a liability as they sort of become openly, if you like, unjust and more involved and embroiled in kind of policies which are oppressive to regional partners and countries.
Now, Michael, let's now focus
on... Qatar is one example.
Yeah, exactly. Michael, let's now bring the U.S. in and see what the U.S. has done. There are reports that Khashoggi's killers received training in the United States. And on top of that, Washington has not even criticized Saudi Arabia for the murder, let alone condemn it. And President Trump is also going on. He insists that he wants to sell weapons to the Arab monarchy despite the Congress' disapproval and motion and you know. And those weapons are reported to be used to take the lives of innocent civilians in Yemen. So why is this?
Well, there are various statements by the United States government. I don't recall if it was the State Department or the CIA which concluded that there was a degree of likelihood that the Crown Prince was aware
CIA.
At a minimum of what was going on, if not more.
Yeah.
CIA, okay.
Yeah.
So it's not like the United States is off the reservation, but President Trump is dedicated and committed to the relationship, economic and security alliance with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And although he may have a personal view on what happened in this particular incident, he is not going to do or say anything that's going to jeopardize that relationship, that alliance with the kingdom. And so therefore, I think that we've tended to see him play it very, very low key on a comparison. The other thing is that I think the president probably thinks that there is some amount of politics going on here, although, you know, although human rights in Saudi Arabia are not what we would like to see and certainly not subject to Western or United States standards. It seems to be Saudi Arabia that was criticized in this report, when indeed there are credible allegations of gross human rights violations against North Korea, Russia, China, Venezuela. The list goes on and on, and that never gets addressed by the UN.
Mohsen Abbas, let's have your comments on that too.
Well, of course, the whole human rights issue is, as I said earlier, something that I think is not even worth talking about, because everybody just manipulates and bends what they think human rights is according to their political interest. The Saudi Arabians are no different. They were actually holding, I think, the presidency of the Human Rights Office in the United Nations, which is sort of laughable in and of itself. But the fact is that this Khashoggi case again reveals that nobody is willing to stand up for true justice when it comes to their own economic and political interests. And this is where the ultimate flaw lies in our current, if you like, global political system, and particularly in the West, that we've made it a norm now that actually we don't care if there are Saudi Arabian citizens being violated in prisons. That's not important anymore. We don't really care if Yemeni children are being bombed to smithereens. We don't care if regime change is instigated in the Middle East. So long as it keeps the dollars coming in, it seems that the money lenders and the people behind the power bases in America and the West are happy to support dictators and despots as per usual, regardless of how much criminality they get up to. I mean, the international sort of criminal courts, America is failing to recognize those, from what I understand as well now. So nobody wants to support an international, if you like, body that interferes with their political economic interests. That is not a good situation, because a world which is in flux, which is increasingly, if you like, competitive, with China rising and the Russians breaking away from any friendship with the Americans, we're in a very dangerous period, that unless you have some strong international bodies which these nations are willing to listen to and work towards creating a more harmonious globe, there's an increasing chance of a global war.
Right. Okay, on that note, we come to the end of this program. Let me thank our guests. So we had Michael Lane, founder of American Institute for Foreign Policy from Washington, D.C., and Saeed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, who joined us from London. And thank you for watching this debate. We'll see you soon.